local communities, and we've also had some discussions with Dixon about how, how does this maintenance facility fit into their long-range plan? Are there other opportunities when we do a relocation or a replacement to site a facility that fits both of our needs and local opportunity, local development needs? So, and when we also go through the siting and some studies as far as the maintenance facilities, we do also factor in what are the, and not just our the roadways that we have expanded to date, but what potential future expansion might be out there for our system. And we try to think in context in that future planning perspective, too, of where a facility might best be located to handle our needs today and then the future needs if we if the system does expand. Toll plazas. We've recently completed a conversion of 22 of our mainline toll plazas from traditional toll collection, as you kind of see here, to an open road tolling. These plazas are all in very, very good condition. We've made some modifications to improve operations for both our toll collectors and for our customers. We also have a number of other plazas that are out there. We've got ramp plazas. We've got 24 manned ramp plazas, 49 unmanned with buildings. We've got 43 unmanned with no buildings. So there's a lot of different facilities and needs that are out there. The CRP provided funding to incorporate efficiencies at the ramp toll plazas. However, some additional improvements are going to be necessary to adequately maintain or replace tolling equipment, cameras, and some of the buildings. The asset management plan is going to identify the necessary improvements to the open road toll lanes, our I-pass only lanes, our automatic lanes, and our manual lanes. This includes both on the road improvements and then the back end improvements that are needed to support tolling and traffic operations. We also have other facilities that we're factoring in to some of this work. Here, our CA facilities, our warehouse in Naperville, you know, what can we do to improve that, and what are our needs now that our system continues to change. We've got a data center. We've got an annex building out at M14 up the road here in Downers Grove. We've got pump stations and salt dumps. So all of these facility needs are being evaluated, too, as part of the long-term planning effort. This effort also includes planning for the future to ensure that the tollway keeps pace with the industry best management practices. We need to make sure that we're staying out there on the cutting edge, if not the bleeding edge. Initiatives such as ICS, Intelligent Transportation Systems, allow us to maximize the efficiency of our roadway. This goes beyond just typical ITS initiatives of cameras, and pavement sensors, and dynamic message signs. We also need to look at ways to incorporate technology to enhance the throughput, vehicles, and people. How do we get more people? How do we improve incident response times? We do know that as the incident response times go down, the quicker we get on site and handle the an incident on the roadway, the more we can do for congestion. We want to see what else can we do to seamlessly communicate with our internal people and with our customers to allow everybody to make the most informed decision. So it's really getting the most out of the pavement that's out there using technology. We've also talked about expanding our commercial vehicle parking facilities, or actually building a commercial vehicle parking facility, and maybe incorporating some park and ride facilities on our system to further enhance transit and get, again, the most out of our system. These initiatives are intended to provide services to our customers and allow us to get the most, again, out of all the assets that we have, both our roadways and our facilities. There are environmental benefits that we look at in each of these categories, and we're going to continue to look at how we can incorporate these green or sustainable initiatives and elements into all of our projects and planning efforts. And the capital needs of these initiatives is also going to be considered to ensure that we are not only environmentally sustainable, but again, financially sustainable. We want to do what we can to get the most out of what we spend. I'm sure many of you have seen this map before, because I know I've done at least 4 presentations to the board showing this very same map. So that's nice and easy for me to keep going back to the well. But the function of the Illinois Tollway system is to move goods, people, and services safely and efficiently. So our first priorities must be to protect and maintain the safety and capacity of our roadways. We're not going to talk about all the yellow dots, but I will talk about some of the green and red dots. The green dots on this map represent those interchanges that require some operational improvements that we may need to consider. These are already full interchanges, but are no longer operating efficiently. These were the ones that were designed 50 years ago to accommodate an entirely different type of traffic. As population development continues to expand, our interchanges can no longer handle the increased traffic. What you really kind of see with these green dots, and I just kind of picked up on this last night, you've got Naperville, Aurora, Elgin, Gurnee, and this is the Elmhurst, North Lake area. These are the areas that back in the 50s were really not much. No offense, Mayor Prado, but what we've seen out there is a significant amount of growth. These are the populations that have now exceeded and are pushing that 100,000 limit. So the interchanges were designed really to handle that much, much lighter traffic. So these are some of those operational things that we may consider out there. We also need to look at the red dots. The red dots on there are the system interchanges. Not all of them, but it's a good representation of the ones that we really need to look at. It's the interstate to interstate connections are the red dots. These are the interchanges that really handle a lot of our major commercial vehicle traffic, and these are very important for mobility. A lot of these were also designed back for a completely different type of traffic. So the interchanges in both green and red may not meet the criteria of our interchange policy because their impact goes well beyond a single community. These are the interchanges that we need to look at to see how do we factor this into our long-term needs, what we want to do, as I said, to make sure that we can keep our system moving, operating efficiently and effectively to continue to provide the services that are needed. So what are the next steps? This 50-year asset management planning, it's going to be an ongoing and continual process. We need to make sure that the core of our system, that's what we're talking about here, is the core of our system, what we have out there. We need to make sure that it's addressed and maintained in a state of good repair. This is a word that you hear a lot of now. It's the SOGR, state of good repair. We want to make sure that our system is meeting the needs of our customers today and into the future. And we want to make sure that we can support future economic growth and activity in this region. We'll look at prioritizing the needs as part of this and everything else. And we heard some feedback at the transition team meeting last Monday. I told you I was tired. About how we may want to start prioritizing and some of these needs. We'll have to look at the state of good repair to address those issues that are worst first. We do this by working with our general engineering consultant or traffic engineer to really identify what are the areas that need the most attention just to address our own needs. We'll also look at the regional compatibility. Randy Blankenhorn was here last month from CMAP. We do a lot of work with CMAP and IDOT and RMAP, the Rockford Area Agency for Planning, to prioritize some of our needs and identify what their needs and priorities are. We look at cost-benefit analysis. We like to see when we do some of this work, what areas need to be addressed and what brings us the greatest return on our investment. We look at the economic impacts of how can we support and sustain some economic development in particular areas. And we look at the coordination and timing of a lot of these projects. As I said, we work with IDOT and the counties to see are there opportunities for us to maybe advance some of these bridge and ramp projects or different types of work to tie in with some of their work. We work a lot with our internal departments here at the table and our consultants, staff, to develop timelines and a very, very high level cash flow analysis to say, okay, and as we have these needs over time, what type of cash flow, very high level, will we need to ensure that we can be financially sustainable? All these system needs will be evaluated in tandem with our ongoing future projects and the planning effort as far as that goes from both a financial and timing perspective and operational perspective. As I said, with the Elgin O'Hare and Western Bypass projects, that does have to factor in the central triage. How do we time up any of these projects? Do some of them provide relief while other projects may need to go on at different times? Elgin O'Hare also involves the Interstate 90 corridor, so how do we time some of this work? And also with some of the transit needs through there. We've also worked with IDOT on the 290 corridor because maybe there are some advantages to us doing some work in tandem with IDOT or maybe doing work in advance of IDOT's work to ensure there is a relief valve during construction. I think that's one thing that we're realizing right now. It's a good thing, it's an excellent thing actually, that we completed a lot of our work when we did prior to the Interstate 290 project going under construction, because what we are seeing is that our wide roadways are providing a relief valve for people trying to avoid the 290 construction using 355 Interstate 294. So really what this was intended to do today is provide a very broad brush overview and inform you, the board, of what work is ongoing, and we'll continue to keep you apprised of these efforts. So if you have any questions, take that. If not, thank you.
If you have a question, and I should know this, and maybe I'm just forgetting, but in terms of you developed this 50-year asset management plan. Mm-hmm. Do we have a current asset management plan that we're living by that was
yes.
developed? And
that is one of the tasks of the general engineering consultant.
Okay, so he's. Yeah.
And that's why I think this presentation is important, because we are looking at a lot of projects that would be new or we could do, but in the meantime, we have to be mindful that not all of our existing system was completely reconstructed and rebuilt under the CRP, although that first map did show that every portion of the system is going to get some improvement. You know, we do have portions that are still 50 years old that are going to, those needs are going to show up and are going to compete with these other projects that we're considering.
Yeah, so then from here, from 2010 to 2016, we have a capital plan that
yes.
you're working off of that's consistent with the, mm-hmm. with that asset management
right.
plan. And then you're just looking into the future, what's next.
Yeah, this is from 2017 and beyond. So
yeah.
what do we need when this current plan is over to fit in?
And any update to the current plans? Because, I mean, plans are just plans, and you always have to kind of revise them. Even if you plan 5 years out, sometimes you go, I'm on my third year, I have to revise what I do for even before the third year.
And we do that.
Yeah.
In fact, the CRP was approved at the end of 2005, I believe, or 2004.
Mm-hmm.
The work began in 2005, and in 2007 we did do a pretty thorough evaluation, and we made some adjustments, and we're undergoing a thorough evaluation right now to make sure that all the assumptions we made back in 2004 are still true now, and that these portions of the system do need to get worked on in the years we have planned. So yeah, that does happen periodically. And the inspections that our general engineer does help us to make good decisions about when those portions have to be worked on.
I just have, going to the financial end of it, I mean, I don't know what the value of our system is worth billions and billions of dollars, and now that we've rebuilt the lion's share of it 50 years, I don't want somebody to come around and say, well, those folks did this over a five-year period, and then they just came in and sat mid-court dribbling the ball for the next 25 years and then got behind the eight ball again. How much do we put aside annually for when we're going to have to rebuild in another 20 or 25 years? Because we're running short, and we need to do I-90. And you know, we're seeing all these grand plans for all these other new projects. I kind of feel like we have a moral obligation to our users that I-90 has to be done first, and like the Eden Spur and stuff, that the core part of our system was 286 miles. How much do we put aside annually, or how do we do that?
Well, you want me to take this job?
Well, you can start.
There's about the program, the CRP program itself through 2016 allocates an amount every year for renewal and replacement or renewal and repair, and that's about $150 to $200 million a year for the next 6 years. And actually, we have to budget for that for 5 years after the end of our program. And again, around the $150 to $200 million.
Where is that $150 million?
That comes.
Do you have a special account where it's hidden?
It is in the renewal, one of the trust indenture accounts.
Okay, so I mean, it's not something that we could come back and say, oh, let's pull out of there.
It's
and
not
use
a major improvement.
53 or West Island. Okay.
It's not a major improvement.
And we fund that annually to $150 million.
Yeah, and one of the key things to realize is when you go out and construct pavement, your initial construction pavement is only going to last 30 years. And then when you go through and do
that's
periodic maintenance on it, that's what actually takes it and stretches it to its full design life, which is a 60-year pavement.
Okay.
So when we do our inspections, we put together a report, we prioritize where money needs to be allocated in order to keep and maintain the system so that we can continue to certify to the bondholders at the bond sales that the assets are being maintained properly and the tollway is providing enough money in order to make sure that you provide the goals of the tollway and that they can recoup the revenue off the tolls to pay the bonds back. Mm-hmm. So it's an ongoing process. And to address the previous question a little bit better, you know, the CRP takes us to 2016. So the assumptions and the directions of which are contained in the CRP takes us to 2016. And what this next piece does from 2017 on is basically says, okay, the pavement that was reconstructed in 2005, it needs to get a small rehab in 2025 and so on, so that we make sure that the tollway is always aware of when money needs to be spent so we can maximize the life of the pavement. And that's not to say that at 61 years the pavement all of a sudden falls apart and stuff like that, but when you get to 61 years, you're kind of starting to live a little bit more on borrowed time than you would if you...
Hey, no, wait a minute.
Yeah, right.
That was...
Who's this guy?
He's
not my doctor.
That's
right.
It's
working now. But in overall, the assumptions that were made on the CRP are dead on. What Rocco said is dead on. He and I worked on this a little bit on the presentation. The tollway's investment in the CRP was well thought out and planned.
So in theory, we won't run into a situation that we had in 2003. In another 30 or 40 years, we will have been rebuilding as we go, so you don't have to do 70% of the system in a 4 or 5 year period.
That is exactly what the 50-year asset management plan is designed to do.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And that's separate from all this other new stuff.
Whatever it is new, we will do.
Partially separate, I'll say that, because some of this has to be factored into some of the new stuff. What are the needs? And by doing some of this, or some of the new things...
Well, no, when I say new stuff, if we were to do the Western Access, or if those are new road beds. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're like you're the U of I football interchange, that would be part of the existing system that needs a major upgrade based on transportation. So that's different.
Right.
But I'm talking about if we lay new road beds. That's a new.
Well, I have to point this out. Doing some of those newer type projects do provide relief operationally for our system. So getting less different traffic on it, it does prolong the some of the.
Western Access would take some traffic off 294 in theory.
Or a 53 theory would take off of I-94. You know, so there's a redistribution shuffling of what's out there.
We'll talk about that.
Right.
That's a future meeting.
Are you going to look at, like, managed lanes or different types? I mean, we kind of are managed because people pay toll. But
sure.
In addition, additional managed lanes.
And I believe we'll have something to talk about, some of our ongoing efforts on our congestion pricing study that we've been doing, not just for the tollway, but a regional-wide congestion pricing study in partnership with NPC.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, thank you, Rocco. Okay, a couple of quick updates for me, and then we'll go. I know it's a lot of presentations, but we want everybody to be educated about not only upcoming projects, but also the processes and other policies here. As you may recall, we have been talking about for the last couple of meetings my management review of the permanently assigned vehicles, also extending to transponder usage, cell phones, laptops, Blackberries, all of this, that type of equipment that ultimately is assigned to employees. We're about halfway through that process, and I think we'll have a future update on that, hoping to wrap that up in 30 to 45 days so that we can have some recommendations around all those topics and see where there may be opportunities for us to be more efficient in our use of those items. The management audit that we had been working toward, again, the scope of work, I think we're on probably almost the final draft. I found a couple of additional changes that I wanted to make. I'm happy to share that, certainly, with the board, but that will be the start of then a procurement process that begins with CMS and the Office of Management and Budget and goes through our typical process. As you may recall, we did reach out to the Auditor General to ask if he and his office would want to do that for us. He, I think, rightly said that that's not really what, it's a little bit outside the boundaries and purview of what they would typically do to actually make recommendations about efficiencies and where we might have duplication in our structure or management. So we will be pursuing a competitive RFP for those services. Also, you'll have a copy, or you do have a copy when you go back on your desk, my employment agreement, which has been executed, which we talked about previously, so that you'll have access to that. There certainly won't be any surprises there, but just so that everybody has a copy of it, and of course we maintain it as well for our records. I wanted to also make all of you aware that we began this week a practice that I think will be helpful to us going forward. I and several of our senior staff had a video conference with one of the Turnpike authorities, actually it's the Florida Turnpike Authority from out of state, to begin to share best practices and ideas. I think we found that to be helpful. I don't want to be the only one saying that, but a couple others participated. We found that to be helpful. We're going to try to continue that with other authorities. Certainly there are opportunities at conferences or other places to learn. There are industry associations, but I think those types of opportunities for an hour, hour and a half of quasi-FaceTime with video conferencing capabilities is important, so that's helpful. Onward and upward, so to speak, or at least onward. So I want to introduce Paul Kovacs. He's going to give us a quick tutorial. I thought with all of the change orders and extra work orders that are part of our construction process, it was worth it to provide a little bit of explanation about this process and how what checks and balances are in place and what the tollway has in place to evaluate and approve these requests. Then I think that the chair, this really came from the chair signing off on several requests as she is required to do. And so we're going to speak particularly to those as examples of how the overall process works. So, Paul?
Thank you. I sign on behalf of all of you,
right.
So I wanted to make sure that everybody knew under what circumstances I was signing on your behalf. Thank you.
That's exactly why I'm here, and the purpose is, you know, to give you an overview of this whole process, and it's how we deal with construction contract changes. That's all I'm talking about here. They're all related to construction. Many people are involved in this. This process is very thorough and rigorous. I think it's the best process that's out there, actually, for documenting and evaluating construction changes. As Paula mentioned, the chair and the executive director and myself and the board and my project managers all have responsibilities in this process and key roles. It's contract cost change controls. You'll hear in engineering they refer to the C5 process a lot, or the C5 committee. That's four of the C's. The fifth one is committee. The tollway has always had a process for handling construction changes. You have to, because changes in construction are a fact of life. There are unforeseen conditions. There's things that were not contemplated at the time the plans were put together, and you've got to be able to address them in an efficient and timely manner to keep the job rolling and avoid any construction delays, which will translate into more costs later on that we have to pay. But this process, the C5 process, was introduced back and approved by the board in May 2005, and it was a big enhancement to how we handle changes and during construction. When I talk about changes in construction, the last thing that you see and the final contract documents and the ones that are critical that have to be executed before the contractor can actually receive the money is a change order and an extra work order. A change order is simply a modification to quantities. We had the pay item identified in the contract, but we didn't have the proper quantities. Those are positive and negative. An extra work order in the tollways terminology is a new pay item. So that's an item that was completely left out of the original contract that we actually have to develop and come to an agreement on a price for with the contractor. These documents, the change order and extra work order, are prepared by construction managers. They're the formal documents that are required for payment. And engineering does provide you, the board, with a summary of all the change orders and extra work orders that are in process or executed within a month. And it's included in your monthly progress reports, which the program manager puts together for us. Uh, The things I want to stress about how we go through evaluating change orders and extra work orders is that we do hire professional engineers to serve as our construction managers out in the field. It starts with them, and they work with contractors, and all of our contractors are pre-qualified to do the work that they're under contract for. And we have our own professional tollway staff that gets involved in the process in addition to those others. As I mentioned, you have to have a process in construction for handling changes because there are going to be unforeseen conditions, there are going to be utility conflicts, there are going to be changes in geology that you could not have predicted at the time when the bids were done. Our contract documents address how to accommodate these changes. We have specifications built into the contract documents, and that gives the tollway and the contractor assurance that when a change does pop up, it's going to be dealt with in a fair manner. In addition, we have several other manuals and processes that help guide how our project managers and our construction managers deal with those changes. One critical document is a construction manager's manual. That is actually serves as a scope of work for our construction managers. We also have an ISO procedure that spells out the framework for how we're going to prepare, process, review any change orders and extra work orders. But as I mentioned, it all starts with the construction manager and the contractor. And the first thing that they do now, since we've approved this C5 process, is they develop a document called an authorization to proceed. So as soon as this item pops out in the field, they start the documentation process by preparing a document called an authorization to proceed, and they submit that to their project manager, who is a tollway employee typically, and they bring it to the C5 committee. The C5 committee, it's the Contract Cost Change Control Committee. What they do is they review this authorization to proceed. They either reject it outright, or they recommend to the chief engineer that it be approved, or they give it back to the project manager and say, we need some more information. You know, we want you to revise and resubmit this. So that C5 committee was initiated at the May 2005 board meeting. The duties were further refined in the April 2006 board meeting. The committee is an authorized internal panel that reviews all the ATPs that come in, and all these ATPs are used as the first step of documentation in support of a change order and extra work order. This committee is comprised of all tollway employees in engineering, and none of those employees are directly involved in the projects that the ATPs are for. In addition, the actions of this committee are monitored by representatives from procurement, finance, and the audit department. Back when we were in the midst of delivering $1 billion of construction in a year, this committee might meet every single day. Now, its frequency of meetings has been scaled back. If there is a critical authorization to proceed document or ATP on the docket, they will, you know, convene. But typically, it's like 1 to 3 times a week now, we're averaging. Since its inception, the C5 committee has reviewed over 11,000 authorizations to proceed. And that's a lot of changes that they had to evaluate. And I'm happy to report, and it's also included in that monthly report, that we are averaging at 0.49% of our award amount. As far as all changes, all 11,000 changes have only modified our award amount by 0.49%. And we are budgeting for 5%, which is the industry standard, and we feel pretty good about that. C5 submits a recommendation with respect to each ATP, and they give it to me. And then I have the ability to either accept it, reject it, modify, or request further information on it before it goes beyond me. This C5 process and that board action back in May 2005 did authorize some approval limits for various tollway managers. Project managers have the ability to approve an ATP that's up to $30,000 in value. The chief engineer has up to $100,000. The executive director up to $150,000. The chair will do anything between $150,000 and $200,000. And if there is a change that results in a modification above $200,000, I come to the board and I do a formal presentation. But regardless, if it gets to the board level, everybody above that signs off before it gets to the board. So, and that's why Paula wanted me to bring this to you, because she has signed off on three of these recently. One was